passion that I have is I just love meeting new people
and
people who have different experiences to me. And it's great catching up with people who are like you.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy and it's comfortable. But I love meeting people who have different experiences because I learn and it helps me think through what's important to me and I get to see the world through different eyes. I really, really love that. So it's a perfect, I just thought it was a perfect opportunity that I can offer some help by, you know, the experience I have in teaching English. But I also have a great opportunity to connect with all these people who have different experiences, different language, different culture, different families, different everything, and see my world through new eyes.
You're listening to Who Is My Neighbour, a podcast by You Belong Australia. Each episode, you'll join with Sorgul and Warren to meet some of Australia's newest neighbours. You'll hear their stories, listen to their hopes and dreams, and discover the incredible courage and inspiration they bring to our communities and richly diverse Australian culture. You'll also learn from some more established Aussies too and the joy they've found living and working alongside our refugee and migrant background neighbours.
Hi, welcome to episode one of Who Is My Neighbour? Today in the episode, we got to talk to Warren. Tim got to sit down with Warren, who will be the co-host of Who Is My Neighbour? And we got to hear a little bit about Warren's story and how he... where he got his passion from to be involved with the podcast and involved with people who are diverse in other languages and cultures. So, Tim, how did you go with Warren? What was your standout from your conversation with Warren?
Yeah, one of the things I loved, obviously you'll hear his passion for meeting people, new experiences, new cultures, and it started for him when he was quite young, moving overseas. But he also spent, I think, 12 years living in Japan with his family. His children grew up and going to Japanese school. And just, you know, his background really is just more of a reflection of someone who's just always looking to be curious and learn from other people and then incorporate that into his own life. He's easily inspired by the courage he's seen in the community here of families that are new to Toowoomba and that are looking to integrate here. So, one, I think he's going to be a fantastic co-host with Sorgul.
I think so. Yep.
And I just know that you're just going to love hearing his passion and his love for people. And it comes right through. So, yeah, it's going to be fantastic. I look forward to people listening to it.
Yeah. He's spent a lot of his career actually teaching English and teaching people to teach English.
Yeah.
So he's very well versed in this sector, and it will be great to glean from some of his wisdom and some of his many years of experiences. So we really hope that you enjoy this episode. You'll definitely be inspired by his story. So let's go to your interview with Warren, Tim.
Hey, Warren, welcome to your very own podcast, Who Is My Neighbour?
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here.
Yeah, so we're excited. We're launching a new project, which is an opportunity to peer into the lives of neighbours here in Toowoomba, and especially some of the newest neighbours, families and folk that have just made their new home here, former refugees.
Absolutely. Some amazing stories I've already heard, and I'm looking forward to hearing more as well.
Yeah. And as one of the co-hosts, we want to kick things off by learning a bit about you and your background and why you're involved in coming alongside these wonderful folk that have called Toowoomba their new home and hear a bit about your passion and what you've learned along the way.
Sure. Really excited to share a little bit of my story. Because I think that helps to understand where you're coming from, I guess.
Yeah. So let's do that. So, Warren, you've lived around the world.
So when I was 17, I went overseas for the first time as an exchange student. So I lived in Central America, in Panama, for a year with a homestay family. I went there without a single word of Spanish, didn't speak a word of Spanish, and just pop into a family that didn't speak any English, and pop into school where it was all in Spanish. That was my first experience, I guess, in a different culture with a different language. And that was quite an eye-opening experience, being the foreigner in that culture. And at that time in Panama, the American foreigner, the gringo, as they the term that was used, wasn't a highly esteemed foreigner, right? The Americans were handing back territory that they had taken around the Panama Canal at that period of time.
Okay.
So it was interesting sort of being seen with kind of a bit of a suspicious eye, because obviously I looked different, I spoke differently. Until towards the end of my stay, when I started to speak Spanish more fluently, and then people mistook me for a Spaniard, not an American. So then I was okay again. But having had that experience, I guess, a little bit of what it's like to be a foreigner in a strange land was, I think, as a young person, really impactful for me.
Well, I mean, to go through that experience, right, learning to feel accepted by a community, the struggles and challenges of how do you feel like you've got permission to be
exactly
part of the community. Yeah.
And when you don't know, what the rules are, like the cultural rules, the social rules are, you don't know how to win friends and to be. So it's lots and lots of questions, and it can be really confronting and really confusing. And I just remember how much I appreciated people who were willing to make the effort to be my friend. And that was a bit difficult, with the language barrier and things like that. It was like, oh, at last, someone will be my friend.
Yeah. So how's your Spanish now?
Terrible. it's a long time ago. If you know anything about Panamanian history, you'll be able to date that story and realize it's a very long time ago.
Yeah.
So after then, I came back to Australia. And then sometime after that, my family and I moved to Japan, and we lived there for 12 years. So any remnant of Spanish language that I had was taken over with Japanese.
So when you say you and your family,
so my wife, we have two daughters.
Yeah.
They're both our girls. We have two children. They were both born in Australia, and then we moved to Japan when they were very young.
Mm.
So 2 and 4. They were.
Yeah.
So they went to the local school, the local kindergarten. So all of their education was in Japanese, and they grew up bilingual, with two first languages, whereas we had to learn Japanese as a second language. And
learning as an adult is a lot more challenging.
It is very, very difficult.
I
have an appreciation for just how difficult it is. And that's another thing, I guess, going through that experience of trying to master a language. You know, going for 1 year, you sort of get some conversational
colloquial
skills. Yeah, you can carry on a general conversation.
Mm.
But having been there for 12 years, I really...
you're doing pretty well after just 1 year to be able to do that.
Yeah,
It's true. It can take quite a long time.
I have very fortunately have a fairly good ear for language, but my brain is now full. I've decided no more languages, that's enough. I'd actually already studied French at school, and I did Italian at university. And so now it's just a big jumbled mess in my head. But trying to master a language is different to just trying to get conversational skills. And I went through that process myself. I decided I was going to pass the level one proficiency test in Japanese, which is the top level. I spent a whole year, basically every spare moment, after having lived there for 10 years and worked in the language. And I did pass, thankfully, but oh my goodness, you have no idea how exhausting, or maybe you do. Someone who hasn't been through that process of trying to master a language, that was for me an experience of just how exhausting it is, mentally and emotionally exhausting, trying to master a language. And I guess having had that experience, I'm just so admire the success of people, our neighbors, as we've said, who are making such great progress, knowing just how tiring it is, and they've got other lives to live as well. It's not like learning English is the only thing they're doing.
Yeah.
So I have a great and deep admiration for for everybody who is continuing to
try
to adjust to this culture and also master the language. It's just amazing.
Yeah, and they're tremendous, tremendous people, as you said, that have endured so much loss and heartache on their journey to come to Australia.
Exactly.
And so, like you said, to be able to have the courage and the resiliency to push in and to learn English, which isn't the easiest of languages either.
No, that's actually my I taught at university for many years, that area of English language learning and teaching. So it's my area of academic expertise, as they say.
Yeah.
And yes, I can assure you it's one of the harder languages to learn.
And so that's a good segue into kind of your involvement now within the community. So Toowoomba, as people will discover as they listen in on this podcast, has been accepting refugees. Well, more in its recent history, last two decades has been, quite an, a positive influx of refugees from Central Africa to now more recently the Middle East.
Correct.
And many groups and organizations are doing wonderful work and helping them. And You Belong is really grateful to have you volunteering and serving in the space of English language learning.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about why you got involved. Obviously, you've hinted to it a bit, but and what it is that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been teaching English as a second language for about 25 years. When we moved to Japan, we started doing that straight off. We were doing other work as well, but that we were doing that for the entire duration of our stay in Japan. And when I came back to Australia, I continued teaching English, and then I was teaching people how to teach English. So I've been very, very heavily involved in it. And it's something, obviously, I've got that skills and experience in doing. And I just heard about the You Belong English classes through social media, I guess. And I thought, that is almost a no-brainer. It's something that, I have a lot of skills and experience to offer. And I could so easily do that. But secondly, and I think that the passion that I have is I just love meeting new people and people who have different experiences to me. And it's great catching up with people who are like you. It's easy and it's comfortable. But I love meeting people who have different experiences because I learn and it helps me think through what's important to me and I get to see the world through different eyes. I really, really love that. So it's a perfect, I just thought it was a perfect opportunity that I can offer some help by the experience I have in teaching English. But I also have a great opportunity to connect with all these people who have different experiences, different language, different culture, different families, different everything, and see my world through new eyes.
Wow. I love that perspective because so often we think that, when we want to engage somebody who might need service or help, it's about them being the only beneficiary recipient. But in the process of stepping into someone's life, and like you said, just getting to know them, in broadening your relational experiences and those that you become friends with and That's right. Become so much richer in your own life.
Well, that has been my experience. I genuinely find my life is richer and more meaningful as I connect with people who are different to me. Everyone is different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Some people look very similar, but actually have different views.
Yeah.
But just connecting with different people is a good thing for me in terms of my personal growth. And just a sense that my life is rich and full.
So what are you witnessing in you teach a particular class, and as you're participating in these English friendship groups and programs, what are you seeing in some of the participants? Can you kind of, without and maybe sharing any names or throwing, is there any stories?
Yeah,
or any
absolutely. Examples? The thing for me that I found most interesting in my first few weeks was the way that the class members would interact because obviously social structures and cultures are quite different.
Sure.
And just trying to work out who's who and how they all connect to one another, it was really interesting. One of the fun things that I joke with my class about is they all call me teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm quite used to that because in Japan it's a similar thing. You use the word sensei, which is teacher, which is a sign of respect.
Sure.
But in Australia we don't do that. And I've been trying to teach my class, fairly advanced students. In Australia, certainly when you're adult learners, you call your teacher by their first name. And my first name is Warren. So call me Warren. I go, okay, teacher. No. So I wear a name badge. And every time someone says teacher, I go, what was my name? And many times students have said, look, sorry, it's no disrespect. I said, no, I totally understand. I'm not angry with you for not calling me my name. I understand. But it's just so hard to break those habits, right, and those customs. And when you actually genuinely, it's very touching that someone generally wants to show respect. And so they're trying to find a way to do that that is going to work. But it's also nice to, I guess, have a little bit of fun and say, just call me Warren.
I'm sure that there's some teachers out there that are like, if only my students would have a little bit
more respect.
But at the same time, it's a great learning experience for these students of yours to understand, hey, the Aussie culture in general is a little more informal, and there's ways that they can adapt and learn the ways that the community might
operate. And language and culture are inextricably connected. And so there's no point just learning the words of a language if you don't understand the culture in which the language is used.
Yeah, so very true.
And of course, English is a language of many different cultures. Mm. It's not just one exclusive culture. Even in Australia,
of course,
it's a language of different cultures and subcultures. So really, when we're teaching English, we're also teaching cultural norms.
Yeah.
And so it's a subtle thing, I think, but the words that we choose to teach in the class, and the way we choose to teach. For instance, I can be a bit of a grammar Nazi in terms of very strict about grammar. But in the class, very often I'll say, well, this is the correct way of saying it, but no one in Australia says that.
Mm.
This is how we say it. Right. You know what I mean? So it's like if you're sitting an English test, you really should say it this way or write it this way to be marked correct. But if you're actually talking to your neighbour, don't say it the right way. Sure. Say it this way, because that's how we talk. That's how we communicate. So there's a lot of culture and social interaction involved in learning how to speak another language.
I have to say, sitting in on one of your classes for a brief moment, I was very much amazed at the advanced level that you're teaching, but also at how poor my own English was. I think you asked a question and I decided to chime in only to embarrass myself and have the complete wrong understanding of an English concept. And so it was definitely just wonderful to see. Yeah. You know,
that is the difference between the way that children learn languages and the way that adults learn languages. Adults learn languages through rules and structures because that sort of intuitive language learning skill is lost sometime in our teenage years for most people. Mm. So we find a lot, some of my Yazidi friends, for instance, with little children, the children are speaking
They're the translators, aren't they?
I'm like,
quick, get my son to come over here.
Here for 9 months and you already speak as well as I do.
Yeah, so true. Yeah. Well, look, it's just phenomenal to see just the way in which you know, to see you in action, to see you involved and serving and just your personality coming through in what you do as well. What makes you most excited about this podcast we've got coming up? What are you most looking forward to in meeting with both former refugees as well as others here in the community that are engaging and serving?
It's the stories, Tim.
Mm.
I love to hear other people's experiences.
Mm.
I think there's always something to learn.
Mm.
And I personally always have something to learn.
Mm.
And one of the best ways to learn is through other people's stories. And you can make a list of, here are the important things to remember in life, or you can hear someone tell their story and, now I've learned something really important. So there are every person has a story.
Yeah.
And some of those stories are just incredible. And I can't wait to hear them.
Well, Warren, I couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks so much. And I look forward to people getting to know you through the process of the podcast as well. And looking forward to tuning in myself.
It'd be great chatting, Tim. Thanks.
All right, you got it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Who Is My Neighbour? To learn more about the work of You Belong Australia, just head to youbelong.org.au and find out all the ways you can get involved and empower refugees to integrate and thrive. Lastly, would you help support this podcast simply by sharing it with others? You can also write a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or subscribe to us on YouTube. Yes, we are a video podcast as well. Well, thanks again for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Who Is My Neighbour?